Welcome to this episode of the Essential Church Podcast, an ongoing conversation about some of the most important issues facing the local church today. I'm your host, Andrew Arndt, and today I want to take you to a conversation that Pastor Daniel Grothy and I had with Greg Waybright. Greg was the president of Trinity Evangelical Divinity School when I was a seminary student up there in Chicago in 2003, 2004, and 2005. Went on to pastor at a church in Pasadena, California, retired a few years back. He's on the board of Wheaton College right now, and is one of those guys who models health and longevity in ministry better than almost anybody I can think of. And so Pastor Daniel Grothy and I have a conversation with Greg specifically about that in a time when so many people are walking away from the ministry, they're dropping out of churches left and right. What can we do to sustain longevity in ministry? Greg has so many great insights on that, and this was just a tremendous conversation. I can't wait to share it with you. So without further commentary from me, here's to the interview. So this is a conversation I have been looking forward to having for a really, really long time. This is our dear friend, Greg Waybright. Greg and I go back a number of years. So in 2000 and 2003, I had just graduated from Oral Roberts University. So I'm born and raised in the Pentecostal charismatic world. I had gotten a business degree at ORU. And knew that the Lord was calling into ministry, and the Lord had opened up a door for me to attend at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois, Reformed Seminary, which is just like, to me, theologically, experientially, it was on the opposite side of the world. Like, how are you calling me to this place?
We needed you. Keep
going.
Well,
thank you. It's nice of you to say. Came in, I've told you this before, Greg, but I came in with no small amount of fear and trepidation about that. And I met you pretty early on. You were the president of Trinity at the time, and it was your warm, welcoming, encompassing pastoral presence that it made me feel like from the word go, I just thought, oh, okay, if that guy's in charge around here, I can do this.
You were part of the leading of God's Spirit of a number of people out of the Assembly of God and out of the Vineyard movement and from the global variety of charismatic churches that started coming in. John Stott, in fact, was sending us some Anglicans who were also Spirit-filled people, and it changed our campus.
Well, I got to tell you, Trinity, I was surprised at how safe and good and wholesome an environment Trinity was for me as a charismatic. I never felt like I had to be on the defensive with who I was there, and I think you had a lot to do with making that possible. So we have maintained some connection over the years. So after Greg was the president of Trinity, he went on to be a pastor at a church in California, a large church in Pasadena. Now you're 72 years old, is that right? 71?
Right, 72.
And retired. But I don't think that we mean the same thing when we say the word retire. what are you up to these days, Greg?
Right. I wasn't sure what I would do. I had a point where I thought I should pass the baton onto these really marvelous young pastors that were there at the church, the Lake Avenue Church in Pasadena. And I thought, what am I going to do now? What does a pastor do? We've got to stay involved in what God is doing in this world. And so I'd begun praying with the president of Wheaton, I'm a trustee there, and he called me and he said, "Whatever else you're thinking of doing, you've got to drop all that and just come and be with us." So for 2 years, I became the chaplain at Wheaton College. I stepped into a hole there. That just finished. So what I've been doing, it feels like I've been kind of the old guy. Talking to people about what we thought you might be dead by now, and going into pastors' conferences and talking about how is it that we can keep our faithfulness and vitality and love for Jesus and love for the church and even for pastoral ministry in a time when sometimes that's so tough. So I'm just doing a lot of things like talking with you two about what we're talking about today.
Yeah, well, that's so much of what I love about you. Every time I'm with you, you're 72 years old, you've been in ministry forever. There's a vitality and there's a vibrancy that you have. So, and you've done so many different things. You've worn so many different hats. So pastor, seminary administrator, also seminary professor. I think you have a PhD in theology from Marquette. Is that right? Did I get that right?
You have that all right.
So you've done all of
those.
I should
be smarter than I am.
So 72, but you're still in it. Yeah. And you're still vibrant and alive. And that's so much of what I love about you, is that you're a model to us of vocational vitality, which is what we want to talk with you about today. I'm just curious, Greg. So here you are sitting from the, you know, from the lofty peak of the moment in life that you're at. Talk to us about the challenges that you've experienced along the way. Like, how have you been able to make it? How have you sustained ministry across all these decades?
That is such a big question. And I knew you were
the largest question that I can think of to ask you about that. Yeah.
And I knew you were going to ask me that. So I've really been giving a lot of thought and prayer to that. And I think I mentioned, Daniel, that actually there are several groups that are asking me to come and deal with that issue, one in South Korea and a couple of pastors' gatherings here, because how important this is. Mm-hmm. That a lot of pastors, and some attribute it to COVID, but mm-hmm. I think there are many other things, have come to the point where they're expressing on the staff exhaustion, mm-hmm. Discouragement, or what it emerges, unfaithfulness mm-hmm. in their relationships, and are leaving ministries or are thinking about it. So I've been doing a lot of chewing on that mm-hmm. question. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we can best kind of walk down it, but I've thought of a couple of things that I would love to just kind of throw out on the table and then have the three of us.
Give us the first thing that comes to your mind when the question is posed to you, and let's interact with that a little bit.
Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind is what I think most people would expect you to say, and that is the developing of rhythms. Mm. And by that, we usually think about spiritual disciplines. Mm-hmm. And I do think those are essential for us as well as for our people and their sanctification and their growth and to love Jesus. But often when you start talking about spiritual disciplines, it almost becomes like a whole new set of rules and things you have to do. And instead of it energizing your faith, mm-hmm. It can actually begin to sort of drain you instead. So what I've thought about my own walk with God over the years is that there is one main rhythm that has become for me the center of every other sort of rhythm, and that is simply the fourth command. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this. I don't think I did this at the seminary. I did this for the college students. It was my semi-annual message about the fact that there is a fourth commandment that it applies to presidents and pastors yep. as well as to all of our students. Right. And that if all the other commandments in the yep. Bible are hard to obey, yep. we should not be shocked when this one is. And mm-hmm. and that is, and I found this to be so crucial for my own walk mm-hmm. with Jesus, is that if we have every day to be the same, uh-huh. Days get to be routine, we get to be exhausted, we wonder when anything will ever change.
Yep.
And even if we get a break and get a sabbatical for 3 months or yep. whatever, if nothing changes, we go right back into that mess.
Yep.
And we need to develop a rhythm that can be lived at any time. And at all. And I think it starts there, and that's why it's right in the Ten Commandments.
It's fascinating because when you were saying like this one discipline, I kind of thought you were going to say like the discipline of personal prayer and Bible reading or something, sort of like the evangelical, mm-hmm. read your Bible and pray every day and you'll grow.
I'll probably want to say true. That.
Yeah.
I want to say
yeah. So we won't. Yeah, well, I won't get ahead.
Yeah.
But you started with Sabbath and
you
came and visited New Life East where I was preaching one time. And mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken, I think I touched on it. We were talking a little bit about the importance of gathering for worship. And
you
I said
did.
To them, and I had just been thinking about it all week, and I had never formulated it quite like this. Mm. But the fourth commandment, we have this tendency not to treat it as quite as important as the other commandments.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, the fourth commandment, but the real important ones are like, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal.
Right.
But Moses doesn't tear them in that way.
Right.
So apparently, observing the Sabbath.
And actually, this one is two-thirds longer than any of the
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So let's just talk literarily about the importance of the Sabbath.
Yes.
Because thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. Those are punchy.
Yep.
Yeah.
He takes them on a history.
Yes.
And a journey. And when your children ask you. So he's talking multi-generational instruction around the Sabbath.
Yes.
And he goes two-thirds longer than any other. Even mm-hmm. love the Lord your God. He hang on one second here. Yeah. I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to tease this out. Mm. It's going to be remember your ancestors, and your great-grandchildren one day are going to ask you, why do we do this?
Yeah.
And tell them we were slaves in Egypt.
And of course, yeah, exactly. Like, and there are like the two different, like Deuteronomy's got a version of mm-hmm. that one, and then Exodus has a version, and one version roots it in the cosmos. This mm-hmm. is like part of the central pattern of the cosmos, and the other is rooted in covenant, the story that you've come from. And yeah. for Moses,
yeah.
it is as important to the well-being of our personal lives yes. and the lives of our community that we observe this yes. commandment as it is that we not murder people.
Yes.
Right.
I don't know that we pay enough attention to that.
I found that to be true in my own walk with the Lord. And so that's one. And you notice too, and I love what you have said. And ultimately, I think it's rooted in the very pattern of the way God created,
right.
you know,
yeah.
that he stopped one day, not because he's tired, yep. but that making us in his image. Mm. This is the rhythm.
He is
of
leisurely.
Life.
God is not exhausted. Yeah. God is happy.
Yeah. yeah.
God is leisurely.
Yep.
And I think I wrote in my first book, Chasing Wisdom, on the importance of Sabbath. And I said, leave it to Americans to ignore that Sabbath, mm. but then to create the false god of vacation.
You're right.
Yeah. We have created this perverse vacation culture where we drill our bodies for a year, mm-hmm. and then we go to Hawaii for 2 weeks, and we mm-hmm. call that good.
Yeah, and then we come right back.
Then we come right back into an anxious, fraught yeah. weekly rhythm. And God says, "If you'll give me 1/7 of your time, if you'll just settle into the rhythm of the world and into the rhythm of the Godhead mm-hmm. and into the leisureliness of life that mm-hmm. I have for you." I mean, you don't read about any vacations in the Bible.
Mm.
I can't think of one vacation.
Yeah,
but we now
think of one.
Right? Because I think maybe they didn't have the resource to do it, but maybe they didn't need to because they lived in a certain way that was a sustainable way.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The two parts of that command are also I found to be so helpful practically that the first part is 6 days you shall labor, mm-hmm. get it all done.
Yeah,
and for me, just the way I've tried to apply that is to identify what is the work God has entrusted to me mm-hmm. at this season of my life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right.
And to write that down. And I think that's changed at different times.
Yeah.
What is that work that he's in? And then to get that all done in yeah. 6 days. And then the other one has to be different.
Yeah. yeah.
Which has become a bit challenging when you're a pastor, because I really believe because it should be a day unto the Lord, that yeah. day of gathering
right.
with your congregation, with your people in worship is such an important part. But for us as pastors—
It's kind of a work day.
Those people, well,
very, kind of.
We want a vacation or a vacate or often the people who we were ministering to.
Exactly.
So, oh, yeah. So I've had to figure out how on earth do you do this? On one side, I get away from a pity trip in that I think about moms and dads with little kids who are primary work is with the children. How do they ever get away and have a day that is different? So
mm-hmm.
so I've thought about that. But for me personally, what I had to do was identify what the work is. I included into that all the stuff that I felt like was work, what my wife would ask me to get done around the house.
Yeah. Sure.
I put that in the work
yeah,
side.
For sure.
And then I made sure that on the day that I set aside to be a Shabbat, a different kind of a day that
right.
was other than, holy than, mm-hmm. different from the others,
Kadosh.
Yeah.
Would not include any of those things. For me, it had to be Mondays.
Yeah.
I had my mentor say, oh, don't do that. That's the worst day for you. You're exhausted after, because
yeah.
we had, a lot of times in my ministry, I had 4 services that I would do.
Huh.
So the next day I would be tired. And so they would say, do it Thursdays. Then you don't have your worst day of Sabbath. But I thought for my rhythm,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I needed a day to be restored
yeah.
that was different.
I want to ask you a question about so what's interesting about I'm going to just tell you what I think is challenging about the yeah. command here is that yeah. Moses says, you know, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work,
mm-hmm.
but the seventh is the holy day unto the Lord. And I think one of the challenges of pastoral ministry is the work is never done.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do all of the work in the 6 days? I wonder how you tease that out in your mind.
Yeah.
Like, how did you know, like, I have done, because the work is never done in ministry.
Right.
Human lives are never done,
yeah.
not until Jesus returns. So how did you know I've done all that I can do this week? What was kind of, what were your little rules for figuring that out?
Yeah, first I wanted to get away from my own, once again, the pity trip you can get on. My work is never done. Everybody else can get away from theirs. Mm-hmm. Because if you're in a farming community, which was where my first pastorate was, mm-hmm. that's also true.
Nobody's ever done their work.
Mm-hmm. And I often think God is gracious with us. I mean, he knows when there are certain things we have to do that just have to get done. So I have thought about that. At the same time, I do believe that as pastors, even though every part of our work can take every moment of our time, mm-hmm. that we can find ways to make that one day different from the others. And I think mm-hmm. for a larger church pastor, it's easier, believe it or not, than for a small church pastor. Mm. I started in a small church that grew quickly. But once I was able to get a staff in place, then I was able to find the kind of rhythm when they knew this was the day off. I also think you have that one passage that says, but there are going to come times mm-hmm. when the ox is in the hole.
Yeah, so go get them.
Pull that thing out. And because it's not that God created us for the Sabbath. He created it for us. That's mm-hmm. what Jesus says. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of grace in this in terms of finding joy in that day. And finding out how so that I look at that in those ways and try to mm-hmm. take it not too legalistically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I found that to me it orients the rest of my life.
So good.
And when that starts getting out of sync, everything else gets out of sync.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I find all the other rhythms.
Yes.
My mornings together with God.
Yeah.
The times of prayer. The times of stopping and hearing God's word. Yeah. Finding out when does that work.
Yeah.
But you can't find that it works unless this first one is sort of established.
Sabbath anchors sacred time.
That's yes. Yes. Amen.
Yeah. Okay. So if that's the first one, what's the second one?
Well, let me add on to that one thing before I go into the second, mm-hmm. and that is even for those other kind of spiritual disciplines, I do find they're so important for me. Maybe this was because God sent people from Assembly of God and Charismatic to us, mm-hmm. but to have that time of silence and solitude mm-hmm. so that God can break into my life and speak to me. Mm-hmm. So I do have this rhythm that I have every morning. I get up earlier than the rest of my family. I always have mm-hmm. that I meet with God, but I found that instead of me just thinking, oh, I've got to read this much of the Bible or whatever, to be able to stop.
Mm. Yep.
And allow God, because I believe that God is imminent, he is present. Mm. And whether that is in the meeting of your church or in our own devotional lives, when you stop and allow him to speak to you, mm-hmm. when you read the word and know it's God's voice and allow that to break into your life, God speaks. And and that renews my heart and my spirit in such new ways. I go out of those times thinking, this is real. Uh-huh. I go out sometimes just saying, I am a believer. I belong to him because we're often depleted by our own failures and questions and so forth. So that's the second thing I wanted to say. The other rhythms fit within it, but even the ones that we usually mention as our spiritual discipline, Bible reading and making sure you show up at church and all of that, still are shaped by having that one rhythm that leads into the rest.
Yeah.
And those being times given to the Lord that he is present and a time for that. I try to find also, because I don't want to listen to myself preach, I want to find a time where a person that I really, when I hear you preach, God meets me. Mm-hmm. I felt that way when I heard you at church. I was so proud of you, but but I have that. And so I try to find a message that I can listen to. I have a friend. He was also a mentor. I think he was there maybe when you were there, Charlie Dates, mm-hmm. pastor
yeah.
of
yeah. Really Charlie two and I, church. Yeah, we came in at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Two churches down in Chicago.
Salem and Progressive.
And Progressive. Mm-hmm.
What a stud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I listened to him.
Can I ask you about this season of life? So yeah. Andrew, 42, I'm 41, Charlie's right there.
Right there. Mm-hmm.
So you're 72, you've got three decades on Andrew and me.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the years of strength? What do you remember about the years where you had to bounce out of bed in the morning and mm-hmm. there was
there were wars to fight, if you will. Mm-hmm. There was a Goliath to run off. There was a threat. And you were the one that was going out to just knock it down. What do you? We were saying before the show that Pastor Brady, our leader here, he talks about 45 to 55 being what he calls the decade of stupid. And in the time when the kings went out to war, David stayed home, and we know what happened. Like, what do you remember about those years of strength? And what would you, what memories come up? And what would you caution us about?
Was that the years of strength or stupid? Which one? Or is it both?
I think you can be stupid because you have the strength. Yes. You have the strength to think that you can rise above the system.
Okay, the first thing that pops into my head with that is. That I would get up in those times, and when the difficulties were there, which they always are there, the challenges, the things that I would get up in the morning and think, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. I sometimes felt I have to go and do this thing. I'm the senior pastor here because I've been either the senior pastor or the president of the places I've been since I was 30 years old. So I've got to go do this, and you got to show myself to be strong. And I didn't have to. I needed to be there. I think the biggest thing is the ministry of presence, the willingness to get up and walk into those hard, challenging places, knowing that the Spirit of God dwells within us and that He is sufficient even when you are not. And that when you go there, simply faithful, believing that this is a part of your pastoral calling, that God will. When he calls, he also provides and to walk into him. I really feel like sometimes I went into it, I fretted over them so many times. Mm-hmm. And as I look back, each time I would go into those places, God would show up. Mm-hmm. And yet I, right now, I don't want to make it more than it is, but I do have this confidence now that to walk into those hard places, I may not have any idea about what to say or what to do.
I needed to be there.
But
I needed to be there.
Yeah. We call it incarnational ministry.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember the time when Jesse Jackson came to visit me in the midst of a mess we had at Trinity.
I remember that.
He said this to me when he came in. I won't go into the whole story of this thing, but it was really funny. He came in and he said, "You know, you white pastors often cause these racial problems." And I said, "Can we start all over again? Can we start all over again?" And at the end of the time when really things had worked out well, he said, "You know, some people say that that I just like to be in front of the cameras, and there may be some truth to that. But I have a view of what a pastor should be doing, and that is when people are in trouble, someone needs to go and just be there."
Jeez.
So I've called it the ministry of being there.
Yeah.
And it has really guided. So when I think about that now, because I remember that a very unexpected encouragement that I got. I've taken that and I've seen, and it is the pattern of Jesus, isn't it? Mm-hmm. He just walked into these difficult settings.
And tried to read what his father was doing. I'm so stuck on what you're saying here. Because I'm thinking about the early years of my ministry, my leadership, especially my 30s, how often every time I walked into a room, late 20s, 30s for sure, every time I walked into a room, there was such a burden to prove that I knew what was going on and that I had the plan.
Yeah.
And that becomes crushing over time. The anxiety of that you carry into it. Yeah. And then oftentimes what you think is supposed to happen in that room is not what is actually supposed to happen in that room. And I would walk out of so many meetings and I would go, I either missed it or all of that fretting that I did ahead of time, it didn't matter. And so I'm so glad that you say that because to me, the last few years transitioning into ministry in the 40s has been, how do we enter into the light yoke and the easy burden of Jesus? One of those ways is that I actually need to unencumber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I need to carry fewer things.
Don't overfunction.
Yeah, that's right. You feel like you're learning the same thing at this stage of ministry? The only way that I can make this life work is by not thinking too much about it, but by just trying to show up and read the landscape.
Exactly. Mm. Even in my preaching, I'm doing this, which in the early years of preaching, 12, 13, 14 years ago, Lisa said to me, "If it's going to be like this, you need to get a new job. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I can't have you in this house like this, mm-hmm. so wound up in knots the day of, game day, about your job tonight. It doesn't sound like Jesus wants you to feel this way, Daniel. Mm-hmm. So why are you... She's like, we have little kids. If them being alive is like a burden to you in our home, go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's
go
right.
to the library. It's quiet. So I just remember so fraught and frantic.
Yeah.
And I told Lisa we laugh about that now. But 2 weeks ago, driving home after church on Friday night, I said, I am loving how much easier this is because I'm not demanding it to be something.
That's right.
And I'm just showing up to try to read the moment. So I'm still preparing. I'm still reading. I'm still writing. You don't come unprepared.
Yeah.
But I'm coming very open-handed about how this is going to go.
Yeah.
And every service gets to have its own personality.
Yeah.
And an average sermon just gets to be an average sermon. And when a sermon does go great, it is probably not as good as I think. And when a sermon goes badly, people come and tell me, that was, oh my gosh. And I go, that was trash. Like, just chill out. And you just need to be there.
How many times I've thought that? How many times? So
yeah, relaxing into this moment.
I pray that on the daily. Mm-hmm. Lord, I want to be whatever room I walk into today. I want to be the most relaxed presence in the room. Because if I come in that way, and the rooms that we walk into are rooms that we're leading generally.
Yeah.
So I want to walk into that room, and if I, as the leader of that meeting, that moment, if I'm good.
Yeah.
What happens is...
Sets the tone.
Yeah, psychologically, everybody clicks into place. They go, if he's good, I'm good.
Guile, I told you, Smith, my friend, who's a decade ahead of me, love him to death, known him 28 years. He stood at my wedding. He's a brilliant, brilliant mind pastor. And I said, Guile, what is preaching through the decades? What have you learned? He's 51. And he goes, 20s are about cataloging your research. Read, 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 read. Bank your information. Mm. Read broadly. Do the work. He said, 30s are about getting reps and learning your voice and learning who you're not and learning who you are and just practicing that. He said, when you hit your 40s, you're not giving people your content. You're giving people yourself.
Your life.
Yeah.
And when you have lived with the Lord and lived well and have prayed through and sort of rebuked that junk out of you, you can show up and just go, you know what? The best thing I can give you is a chastened self that has lived with God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look at the scriptures, but I want to hopefully model for you what wholesomeness can look like. So anyway, I'm spitballing, but I hear you saying that.
Greg, did you have things that you did that helped you kind of click into that mentality when you walked into rooms in your 40s, like carry that ministry of presence? Mental disciplines or?
Yeah, I think it, in many ways, I'm married to the same person as you are with a different name and a different face. This kind of shaking and saying, this is God's call. Mm-hmm. He only asks you to be faithful. Mm-hmm. My wife was just really good at this. And then the more you engage in that, I'll go into this sometimes. I mean, yes, we need to be prepared, but sometimes we can't be.
Yeah.
And so we just go in. I mean, we could spend so much time storytelling, but I had one situation where a man was going to be taking his life, and I had no idea what I was going to say. I took an older pastor with me at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I said, I'm so glad you went with me because I have no idea what to do. He says, what makes you think that I do?
Someone needs to be there, though.
Yes, got to be there. He said, we just go in, we say, I'm your pastor, I love you, I've come in the name of the Lord. Now, can we help you?
I've come in the
name. And just let the Spirit lead. Yeah. So I think that's what I would say. It's just developing a muscle where you just know He's there.
I've come in the name of the Lord. I was about to get slain in the Spirit.
Hey, bye.
Well, that's you can tell. I remember.
Do we need to tell you what that is, Doc?
He knows.
Pick him up, Usher.
That's great. The modesty plus.
I do
second portion.
Yes. You know, we should move to a second thing I wanted to talk about.
I would love that. Yeah.
So I talked about rhythms. I wanted to talk about relationships because I think this is something that that we don't think about very much about what creates vitality in our lives. And we might think, oh, yeah, I know where you're going to go here. Your small group, your friends, At church that have that because, and that is true. That's mm-hmm. important. I was tremendously taken when I was reading Ephesians chapter 3, that when it talked about the fact that God wants us to be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. What a phrase that is, verse 19. Right. So how do we get from where we are to there? Mm. And you pull back in verse 17 and he says, it's together with all God's people.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
And then when you read the book of Ephesians, all God's people is really all, because you had people in the church in Ephesus that wanted to love Jesus, but they didn't want to be in a church with one another.
Yeah.
The divide was at least as big. I was thinking of all the racial divides you and I deal with, but also in our day right now, it would be like the people in Israel and Hamas coming to Jesus. And now you say, you're going to worship together. Mm-hmm. How's that going to be figured out?
Figure it out.
Yeah, we got a couple things to talk about.
That's what the book of Ephesians is about. So he says this, that it's together with all God's people. And in that context, it is those relationships I have found with people that I wouldn't have wanted to be with that has revitalized my faith. Mm. It was when we had a ministry in my church to women who were being rescued out of trafficking and often out of drug addiction in what was called the Walter Hoving Home. I would go and spend time with them. And sometimes when I'd first meet them, they'd be almost comatose. And then as I saw them growing in their faith, and we tried to be a church that we didn't just say, we're going to minister to you out there, but come and be a part of the family, that it was with them that my own faith was revitalized. It was when I was willing to cross the barrier and actually give witness to people who weren't Christians at all.
Yeah.
And in Southern California, that was all sorts of ways of life. And then sometimes seeing them actually come to Jesus, but it wasn't, and I began to see that my being with them was not just for their salvation, it was for my own.
Eugene Peterson told me the same thing. He said that, you know, most people don't know this about the Message translation. They think it was, kind of bless his heart, isn't that cute? No, Eugene was trained by the premier Old Testament scholar of his generation, William Foxwell Albright. Johns Hopkins, working on a PhD. Mm-hmm. Eugene's a freak academic. Yeah. And spent 6 years in the seminary teaching Greek and Hebrew. And Eugene said, I discovered at 32 I was a pastor. And so I left the seminary and I became a pastor. And he said, I was sure with all of my educational background that the Lord was going to send me to the preaching seat of the Presbyterian denomination. And I was going to stand in front of the cultural elites and the sophisticates and the intelligentsia, the people who'd done their homework. And I was going to proclaim an eloquent gospel. Mm-hmm. And he said, he sends me to an old cornfield outside of Baltimore with people who don't give a dang about the scriptures. And he said, really, the number one group of people he sent me to minister to were alcoholics.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he said, I had a church full of alcoholics. And I would take them to the Greasy Spoon Diner on Tuesday morning, and I would be speaking to them. And I'd say, you know, like Psalm 3 says, the Lord thy God in the midst of thee, you know, he'll lift up your head. And he said,
what?
They were staring at me.
Yeah.
And well, you know, like Psalm 91 says, and he will give his angels charge. And he said, okay, meet me here next Tuesday. And Eugene would go home and he would open Psalm 91 in the original Hebrew and he would translate it for the drunk.
Yeah.
And he came back next Tuesday and he slid across the, you know, table, Psalm 91 in Baltimorean alcoholic language, people who have no background with the scriptures. And that became the Message Bible over 50 years of pastorally doing the work. And Eugene said, I thought as a pastor, I was going out there for them. He said, those are the people that made me a saint.
That's right.
And so you're right about these relationships. We're not just going, oh, bless their hearts. We're going to do God's work. They're going to make us Christians, and we're going to make them Christians.
Well, we think as pastors that we make the church, but maybe the church makes us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That God sends us.
It takes some intentionality for us as pastors, because more and more we pull back into our Christian community and don't cross over those walls and those barriers. So I had to be very, very intentional about trying to develop relationships with people who did not think like I think, for whom the gospel, they didn't even know what that was. Mm-hmm. But what I was able to see, and yes, sometimes there were failures in the lives, and sometimes I was deceived, and that's just fine whenever I was dealing with people in those times. But I also experienced the renewing power of the grace of God the renewing power of the Spirit of God to set people free. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, my own walk with God will not be sterile. I mean, right. you go away from those times and say, Lord, this is real.
Yep.
This is, yes, I experienced that. I remember this, but now I'm experiencing it in my daily life. Those 2 years also, this generational piece has also made me think about how important that is. So after being a seminary and a university president and a big church pastor, I went and took a job as a chaplain working with students. And I remember President Ryken, the president, said, when was the last time you went on the top of the organization?
This was at Moody?
Yeah, no, at Wheaton.
At Wheaton, yeah.
And I said, well, 40 years ago? Mm. He said, do you think you can work under someone else? I said, well, we'll see, won't we, when I stepped in. But what happened was the greatest joy in my entire ministry experience. Wow. And that was, I know, freed from the burden of how do you sustain this massive building that we have? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with all these personnel issues? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the insurance? All these things that are also a part of a pastor's life. I just had this privilege of being involved in these 18 to 22-year-old students, finding out the issues they were facing, and finding out that in me serving them, much more they were serving me. It's kind of like Paul and Timothy.
Yeah.
We often think it's all one direction. No.
Right.
But at the end of 2 Timothy, Paul is begging, please come. Right. I'm sitting here in prison. Mm. When you come, bring my cloaks. When you come, bring my books.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I love, here. Timothy.
Right. And I need you to be here, Timothy. And that's what I felt like happened too. So I wanted to say that relationships that you may not have chosen, or even in places where you may have felt, who am I as a baby boomer to actually be involved in the life of a Gen Z person, the privilege that I had of actually having that happen, but revitalized my faith.
Dr. Wainwright, look into the camera and talk to the people out there who are ready to quit, who think, this is too much. I'm done. I'm not made for this. This isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah.
They're looking at you as a 72-year-old with vitality and vigor and bounce in your step and love for the Lord in your heart. What do you want to say to them? Imagine the 40-year-old who's ready to quit, the 50-year-old who's in the middle of life going, I've failed. What do you want to say to them about continuing to go?
I don't want to speak with pat language and easy solutions. I would want to say to you, I've been where you are, and yet it is real. I want to say to you the thing that keeps you going and keeps all of us going is that we ourselves are continuing to experience the reality of the love and the grace of God. That can happen sometimes as you simply invest yourself in people very different from yourself. Mm. That you don't just get into the obligations of the work that you have to do, but that you walk into those places sometimes feeling, oh, I don't really want to do this, but I'll do it as unto the Lord. And then taking the time to hear him say, well done, faithful servant. I want to say to you, don't give up. Mm-hmm. Don't give up. I'm just your older brother. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing there will be a few of you who aren't going to be, who will be older than I am. But I'm talking to you as your older brother. I've walked with Jesus now for 65 years. I've been a pastor or in ministry for 50 of those. And I'm finding more joy now than especially those days when I felt like I've got to do this and do it on my own. Sometimes if you can just take your hands off, and if you can't stay in the place where you are and your church people say, we've got to have a different pastor, well, the Lord knows. Mm-hmm. He knows. But at the same time, if that is the place to which he has called you, I want you to pray that there will be a reaffirmation of that call.
Yeah.
When I get a chance to be with younger pastors, I always end by just praying that, Father, for those who are to continue in this, for those who, like Ephesians says, have been taken captive to be pastors and teachers and missionaries, Father, reaffirm that call upon their lives in such a way that they know that what they are doing is not their choice, but yours, mm-hmm. and that you will be sufficient for whatever task they face when they simply wait upon you. I think that's what I'd want to say.
Amen.
Then I'd want to listen to them saying, yes, but.
Yeah.
Because I can hear myself saying that.
You just gave us a benediction.
Exactly.
It's a blessing. I was thinking while you were talking about the book of Deuteronomy that says of Moses at the end of his life that his eyes were not dim.
Yep.
And his strength was not gone. And that can seem unattainable, but you're modeling that for us. And so I pray that the pastors that are watching this, listening to this, receive that blessing, and that what was true of Moses and is true of you would be true of all of us as well. Thanks for being with us, Greg.
May it be to his glory.
Amen.